Kaya Goranita, 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 Kaya Goranita. Kaya Prabhupada, 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 Kaya Prabhupada. Jayam Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Prabhupada Gajarya Stu Sri Simhada Zwang Vaya Sabhaya Shana Arvind Bhakti Vedan Swam Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopinath Shama Kundu Radha Kundu Giri Govanan Ki Shri Vrindavan Dham Ki Shri Navadvip Mayapur Dham Ki Ganga Mayajun Mai Ki Tulsi Maharani Ki Bhakti Devi Ki Samaveda Bhakti Vrinda Ki Go Premanandi. All glories to the Samba devotees. All glories to the Samba devotees. All glories to the Samba devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 14, text number 42. Tato nuchnapya bhagavan sabhuvam pragavastitan vatsan pulina maninye Yata purva sakam svakam Tato nuchnapya bhagavan Sabhuvam pragavastitan Vatsan pulina mananyanye Yata purva sakam svakam Tato nuchnapya bhagavan Sabhuvam pragavastitan Vatsan pulina maninye Yata purva sukham sukham children. Bhagavan. Sabulam Pragavasitam. Tatsan Purinamanine. Tata, then, Anugyapya, giving permission, Bhagavan, the Supreme Lord, Sabhuvam, to his own son, Brahma, Prak, from before, Avastitan, situated, Vatsan, the calves, Pulinam, to the shore of the river. Ananye, he brought. Yata Purva, just as before. Sakam, where the friends were present. Svakam, his own. Translation. After granting his son Brahma permission to leave, the Supreme Personality of Godhead took the calves, who were still where they had been a year earlier, and brought them to the riverbank, where he had been taking his meal, and where his cowherd boyfriends remained just as before. Please repeat. After granting his son Brahma,
after granting his son Brahma
permission to leave,
the
Supreme Personality of Godhead, took the calves, who were still where they had been, a year earlier, and brought them to the riverbank, where he had been taking his meal, and where his cowherd boyfriends remained just as before. Purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. The word Svabhuvam, to his own son, indicates that Lord Krishna forgave the offense Brahma had committed and treated him with affection as his son. It is stated in this verse that the original cowherd boyfriends and calves were situated just as before near the bank of the river Jamuna and in the forest, respectively. Previously, the calves had disappeared within the forest and Lord Krishna had gone to search for them. Not finding them, the Lord had returned to the riverbank to discuss the situation with his cowherd boyfriends, but they had also disappeared. Now the cows were once again in the forest and the boyfriends once again on the bank of the river, ready to take their lunch. According to Srila Sanatan Goswami, the calves and boys remain in the forest and on the riverbank, respectively, for one full year. Lord Brahma did not actually take them away to another place. By the Lord's omnipotent illusory energy, the gopis and other residents of Vrindavan did not notice the calves and boys, nor did the calves and boys notice the passing of a year's time or feel any hunger, cold, or thirst. All this was part of the pastime arranged by the Lord's illusory potency. Lord Brahma thought, I have kept all the boys and calves of Gokula sleeping on the bed of my mystic potency, and to this very day they have not risen. A similar number of boys and calves have been playing with Krishna for one whole year, yet they are different from the ones illusioned by my mystic potency. Who are they? Where did they come from? Nothing is invisible to the Supreme Lord. Lord Krishna appeared to be searching for the calves and boys only to enact the dramatic pastime of bewildering Lord Brahma. After Brahma surrendered and offered prayers, Lord Krishna returned to the original boys and calves, who appeared exactly as before, although their size had somewhat increased because of one year's growth. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, since Lord Krishna was playing exactly like an innocent young cowherd boy in Vrindavan, after four-headed Brahma offered his prayers, the Lord maintained his role as a young cowherd boy and thus remained silent before Brahma. Krishna's silence indicates the following thoughts. Where did this four-headed Brahma come from? What is he doing? What are these words he keeps on speaking? I'm busy looking after my calves. I'm just a cowherd boy and do not understand all of this. Lord Brahma had considered Lord Krishna an ordinary cowherd boy and had treated him as such. After accepting Brahma's prayers, Krishna continued to play as a cowherd boy and thus did not answer the four-headed Brahma. Rather, Krishna was more interested in rejoining his cowherd boyfriends for the picnic lunch on the bank of the Jamuna River. So, Krishna, he would rather be a cowherd boy than be offered prayers by Lord Brahma. So, being a cowherd boy is a very nice activity and something that there's so much benefit in being a cowherd boy. Srila Prabhupada says that you cannot have Brahminical culture without cow protection. So Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he came here to teach us how to live by having cows and protecting cows and being very strong and healthy by drinking the milk and all the nice products from the cows. So this is the example that Lord Krishna set, that having cows, that everyone should aspire when you'll grow up, get some cows and milk your cows. And Krishna says, anybody who keeps cows becomes very happy. So, aside from that, Krishna actually, he also, even though he was offered all these prayers by Lord Brahma, he becomes bewildered, it's called mugda, in the relationship that he's in, especially if he's in a very intimate relationship with somebody, like when he was a naughty boy and Mother Yashoda was chastising him, he was actually afraid. Krishna's afraid, even though the wind is blowing out of fear of Krishna. The planets are moving by Krishna's mystic potency. Still, because he is full of inconceivable qualities, he can actually become afraid. This is one of his pastimes. And when he is engaged in some pastime with one of his devotees, he feels unable to reciprocate with all the devotees, because there are so many devotees who love Krishna, and Krishna feels he cannot reciprocate with all these devotees because they have given everything to him, especially the gopis. So he says, Napayaham Nirvajasam Yujam Sasari Kricham Vibhadaya Sapiva Ye Mabajanduraja Deha Shinkala Samvrichaya Tadva Pratyatu Sadhana. So Krishna says, I'm not able to repay you the debt because you have given everything to me. You have abandoned everything. You've given up your families, and therefore, because I cannot repay you, you'll just have to be happy with what you're doing. And that is, a devotee is happy being a devotee. And Krishna knows that. So he's saying, just be happy. So anybody who's a devotee is actually happy. Srila Prabhupada would actually chastise people. He would, one time he said, do I have to see your depressing face again? So Prabhupada wanted the devotees to be happy. And the process of devotional service is very happy. But when we commit offenses, like Lord Brahma, he had actually committed an offense. So therefore, he was feeling unhappy. So he was trying to make up by offering so many nice prayers to Krishna to try and make amends for his offense. So, of course, his offense acted more to glorify Krishna. So Krishna's can never be diminished. He's a chuta. He never falls down. He's infallible. Ajita, he's never conquered. So when Lord Brahma was offering these prayers, Krishna was kind of ignoring him because he wasn't that attracted to is kind of reverential praying. Krishna is more attracted to the love. He wants the intimacy. He wants the love of the cowherd boys or the gopis or the cows. When the cows heard the flute, their ears were like upraised vessels drinking the nectar of the sound of the flute. When the river Jamuna heard the sound of the flute, she became stunned. So all the residents of Vrindavan, they're all enjoying so much nectar hearing the sound of Krishna's flute. He's pleasing the devotees. Krishna likes to please his devotees. But when the devotees commit offenses, then Krishna tolerates them. Krishna is the loving father of everybody. So he tolerates whatever his created parts and parcels do. Unfortunately, some people are under the mistaken impression that God becomes angry. God never becomes angry. Of course, Lord Nrisimhadev, he became angry because Prahlad was being attacked by Hiranyakashipu, but Krishna is very kind. He does not become angry. He's always enjoying his wonderful pastimes. But Lord Chaitanya, he's even more merciful. As a father forgives his errant son, Lord Krishna forgave Lord Brahma. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, if you read the pastime of him with Sanatan Goswami, a very wonderful story where Sanatan Goswami was actually tested by Lord Chaitanya. When Sanatan, and it was all arranged by Lord Chaitanya just to glorify Sanatan Goswami. How Sanatan Goswami had drunk the water from the Jharkhand forest and hid jungle. He'd gotten sick. And so he had all these sores on his body. And these sores were very aggravating to him. And so he felt ashamed. He felt embarrassed to go before Lord Chaitanya. He was aware of the disgusting fact that we have a material body. Everybody should think, why be satisfied with a material body? Let me get a spiritual body. Of course, you're all very young and beautiful, but when you get old and ugly. And people avoid you because you're old. No one wants to be around old people. But not only that, your body doesn't work as well. You know, your eyes, you can't, everything goes wrong. So you should not want to get old more than you'll have to get old in this body, but you should try to get a spiritual body. You can get a spiritual body at the end of this life by loving Lord Chaitanya. So when you hear about Lord Chaitanya, he's so merciful. So when he was with Sanatan Goswami, Sanatan Goswami was trying to avoid the pujaris of the Jagannath temple in Puri. So he was walking on the beach, which was very, very hot. The sand was so hot, and it was burning his feet. But he didn't care. He didn't want to commit an offense by having the pujaris touch his diseased body and then being in front of Lord Jagannath. So he went the roundabout route, and when Lord Chaitanya saw him, he embraced him. And when he embraced him, he felt terrible. He wanted to die because he loved Lord Chaitanya so much and he felt so diseased and he thought, why should Lord Chaitanya touch this horrible body? So anyway, he asked Jagadananda Pandit what he should do. So Jagadananda Pandit, he said, you should go to Vrindavan. But Lord Chaitanya chastised Jagadananda Pandit. He said, that Jagga, he's a new boy. Why are you listening to him? You are far more senior than him. But you should don't take his advice. But Sanatan Goswami was upset because he felt that Lord Chaitanya had a more intimate relationship with Jagadananda Pandit because he had chastised him. So he wanted him, Lord Chaitanya, to chastise himself, Sanatan Goswami. So anyway, these were some of the dealings of love between Lord Chaitanya and Jagadananda Pandit. The Jagadananda Pandit actually was Satyabhama, one of the great queens of Lord Krishna in Dwarka. So who can understand all these mysteries? But Sanatana Goswami, he was feeling so bad, and then Lord Chaitanya could understand his mood. So he said, I am your father. You're like my little children. Because then she said, first of all, you are my little children. But then he said, I am your mother. Because the mother, when she cleans up the stool and urine of the baby, for the mother, that is just like nectar. It's like sandalwood paste. It's called chatushama. It's a combination of sandalwood paste and camphor and something else. I don't know what else. What is it? Something? Huh? A guru. Okay. So anyway, to Lord Chaitanya, Sanatana Goswami was like a baby. And so how can a mother feel offended when the baby passes stool? So that was Lord Chaitanya's mood. And he said, actually, this was just a test for me because I'm a sannyasi. And therefore, I have to see everything equally. If I had been revulsed by your body, then it means I would have not seen everything equally. Like Krishna says, Pandidasa, how's it go? Pandita Samadarshana, that the humble sage, by virtue of true knowledge, sees everyone equally. He's not repulsed by anybody's body. So and then he quoted a verse from the Bhagavad Gita, pebbles and stones, gold, one who sees everything equally, he is transcendentally situated. So Lord Chaitanya quoted that verse. So anyway, Lord Chaitanya is, of course, Sanatana Goswami is on a higher level than Lord Brahma. And Sanatana Goswami is more merciful than Krishna. Namo Mahavadanyaya. Whereas Krishna killed the demons, but Lord Chaitanya, he gave them love of God. So, because Lord Chaitanya was a combination of Radha and Krishna, and you cannot approach Krishna without Radha. So therefore, Radharani, she is the queen of Vrindavan. So there's a beautiful pastime. I was going to read. This is a beautiful book. There's a bit of an advert here, excuse me. This is a beautiful pastime from a book by Shiva Ramaswamy about the coronation of Radharani in Vrindavan. It's very beautifully written. This is an 8-volume book. It's an amazing book. It's got beautiful pictures in it. And in this book, Shiva Ramaraj is proving by Shastric references that you can create a holy place anywhere. That if the residents of a certain place are living a Krishna-conscious life without any sense gratification, then that place becomes a holy place. So even Srila Prabhupada said that new Vrindavan could be better than Vrindavan. So he wanted to. He had 8 basic goals of ISKCON, and 2 of them, well, one of them was to establish holy places, and another one was to teach people a simpler way of life. These are very important things. And so, you know, Shiva Ramaraj, he has this beautiful community, and he's created all these holy places within New Brajadam, the community in Hungary. And the center of the community is the deities. So he's going on parikrama using a lot of references from so many shastras and from personal parikramas around Vrindavan. Now he's created all these places, and as he goes around New Brajadam, where he's establishing all these holy places. He's reciting all these different pastimes. So this pastime happened in a place called Amrao. Amrao. So, and this actually involves Lord Brahma. So there's a verse here, and this is all referenced. If you want the references, there's extensive footnotes here. Ordered by the voice of Brahma from the sky, Purnamasi crowned Srimati Radharani, queen of the beautiful forest of Vrindavan, by jubilantly sprinkling the waters of the Manasa Ganga. Thank you for coming to the class. Hare Krishna. And other sacred rivers upon her head in the company of Savitri and other goddesses. I pray that the sacred place known as Unmata Radhastali will sprinkle some transcendental happiness upon me. Radha's coronation was performed twice, first as play by the gopas and second with all due pomp by the Brajabasis. Both events happened after the gopas had crowned Krishna in Chatravan. All three events were part of one greater pastime inspired by Krishna through the agents of Yoga Maya. He desired to establish Radha's sovereignty over himself. See, Krishna wants to be subjugated by Radharani, so that's another reason why she's the queen, as well as over Braja and the Brajabasis. The pastime begins with the gopas tending their cows in Chatravan. The boys were discussing how they might glorify Krishna in a unique way. So Sridham suggested, let's coronate him king of Braj. With one heart, the boys embraced Sridham's splendid proposal. At once, they busied themselves with arrangements for a grand yet pastoral ceremony that would culminate in the coronation of Krishna. After much ado, the gopas sat Krishna on a regal stone beneath the canopy of flowers and crowned him with a wreath of leaves and fresh buds. In various ministerial roles, the boys attended to their new king. Krishna readily assumed the role of monarch. To assert his dominion over Braj, he appointed Madhu Mangal as the leader of a band of gopas, with orders to widely broadcast Krishna's preeminence. Intoxicated by love for his friend and bolstered by his gang of town criers, Madhu Mangal wandered from forest to forest, calling out, O residents of Vrindavan, just hear this decree. The only authority here is the son of Nanda Maharaj, Krishna, the crown sovereign of this land. Anyone found unlawfully picking flowers or fruit shall be brought before him and severely punished. Flaunt the king's authority in even the slightest way, and you shall be dealt with strictly and mercilessly. Therefore, listen carefully, O residents of Vrindavan. Krishna is on your unrivaled king. Madhu Mangal addressed herds of deers, flocks of birds, a muster of peacocks, a pride of lions, even a school of fish. And his words were agreeable to all who heard them, except for one special group. Guess who that was? A group of gopis collecting wildflowers nearby heard the news. They excitedly repeated Madhu's decree to Lalita Devi, who, while she and her attendants were lovingly adorning Sri Radha within a palatial grove. Radharani, seated upon a majestic throne, was dressed in elegant silk robes, decorated with flower ornaments and garlands, and bedecked with jewels exceeding the value of 100 royal treasures. As soon as the news that Krishna had usurped Braja's sovereignty entered Lalita's ears, her face flushed and her hand shook. As hard as she tried, she could not fix a flower crown upon Radha's head. Amused by her dearmost friend's tempestuous reaction, Radha arched her perfect eyebrows to stoke Krishna's ire, as if to say, O loyal friend, what will you do about this treasonous audacity? Lalita clutched the crown as she replied to Radha's silent query. Instigated by a group of foolish cowherds and one deviant Brahmin, one impudent vassal dares to assume the post of Braja's ruler. While Radharani sits upon her throne as the queen of Vrindavan, does some cowherd playing make-believe king foolishly think that we can be subjugated as easily as dumb forest animals? Lalita held the crown ceremoniously above Radha's head and announced, Let this crown, made of the forest treasures, proclaim Braj's real monarch. Then she placed it on Sri Radha's head. As the gopis cheered, Lalita ordered Vrinda, O friend, at once assemble a full battalion of gopis to capture those town criers, the rest of their insurgents in that blackish so-called king. Radha, a faint smile decorating her face, added, those who falsely claim authority over my kingdom should be challenged, defeated, bound hand and foot, and brought before me for punishment. Vrinda armed thousands of gopis with flower batons and deployed them to Chatravan. On the way, they soon encountered Subal, Madhu, and other gopis exuberantly proclaiming Krishna's glories. Suddenly, the boys found themselves surrounded by thousands of militant gopis. As they fled in fear, Madhu Mangal, less agile than the others, was captured and bound with a flower garland. Madhu was brought cowering in fear before the throne of Sri Radha, his bravado deflated. After surveying with a regal glance this pudgy Brahmin prisoner, Radharani leaned forward and said, I am the real authority over this land, but you promote an impostor as ruler of my kingdom. For that offense, you must be punished. And soon your friends and your rascal leader will also be punished. Madhu hung his head low but whispered defiantly, make my punishment be such that my belly is full. Radha frowned, clapped her hands twice, and ordered her gopi friends release him. This fake Brahmin is only interested in filling his belly. Send him away with the message for his would-be king. Capitulate your fool's title, lands, and symbols at once, or pay the price. Hands still bound by his behind his back, Madhu Mangal scurried up to Chatravana, where Krishna was still smarting from the indignity of having his gopas trounced by a gopi army. Krishna's lust of face plummeted even further, seeing his Brahmin advisor before him, bound and shamed. Krishna rose from his throne, embraced Madhu, and inquired, how could this have happened? Madhu replied, this is a result of your pronouncing yourself king of Braja. Cupid, the emperor you claim to represent, trembles before the true monarch of this land, Srimati Radharani. You have challenged Radha's authority, and unless you surrender to her, I fear that you too will meet with an ignoble fate. Friend, I implore you, please abandon your impudence at once. Krishna considered the situation. Binding a king's advisor could be seen as a declaration of war. Then again, he thought, surrendering to her might prove to be more thrilling than defying her. While Subal untied him, Madhu spun in an eddy of love for Krishna and brazenly continued, put aside for a moment my disgrace at the hands of those forest fairies and accept the good counsel I proffer. Madhu then took Krishna by the hand and requested the gopas, our friend will now have to humble himself before a mighty queen. Your presence would only embarrass him even more. Please wait here. With a smile, Krishna assented to Madhu's command. The two of them then set out on the path to Amrao, where Radha's parrot spies had already informed the queen of Krishna's intention to capitulate. The news that Shyamasunda was approaching, ready to surrender, pleasantly assaulted Radharani with loving ecstasies. Her face turned pale, her limbs trembled, and tears began to well in her eyes. And when Radha could see from the elevated vantage point of her queenly throne what appeared to be a sapphire glow coming down the path to Amro, her entire body became rigid and motionless. Lalita placed a reassuring hand on Radha's forearm and said, O Maraha, be steady. To accept surrender from a defeated rival, you must display the regal composure befitting a victorious monarch. Srimati Radharani felt strength from Lalita's words. She took a deep breath, subdued her ecstasy, and entreated her mind, O friend, please be calm. Your desires will be fulfilled soon enough. Krishna was blinded by a golden radiance as he approached Radha's stately kunj. But as he chanted Radha's name, the glare faded to reveal a magnificently dressed monarch seated upon a jeweled throne. Surrounding Sri Radha were thousands of gopis, richly dressed and armed with flower weapons. Krishna thought, I did well not to test my ragtag Gopur army against such a superior military force. The ecstasies Krishna had fought to subdue as he approached Umro suddenly erupted. He turned pale, his lips stiffened, limbs stiffened, and he froze in his tracks as streams of tears shot from his eyes. Madhu Mangal whispered in Krishna's ear, "My love-struck friend, don't let a few morsels of happiness deprive you of the feast of bliss awaiting you at Radha's side. Control your heart and keep walking." As Krishna came close enough for the gopis to hear his footsteps, wide-eyed Radha thought, "I am most fortunate. Not only can I see Krishna's enchanting form, but I can also hear the tinkling of his ankle bells." Anyway. I'll just read a tiny bit more. This is Madhu Mangal speaking. "I have advised my friend Krishna, the prince of Nandagram, to submit to your royal authority. Following my wise counsel, he has come here to surrender himself to you unconditionally." Madhu looked at Krishna, then at Radha, before continuing, "As a token of his subservience, Krishna will offer you his most valuable possession, his priceless embrace. Please graciously accept it." His words made the gopis giggle, and Radha flushed with embarrassment. Madhu, with typical melodrama, then stood Krishna next to his beloved and stepped back to revel in the sight of the divine couple. Again, Madhu stepped forward. He took the wreath from Krishna's head and placed it on Radha's feet. Then Krishna lay his flute on Radha's footstool and knelt before her with folded hands. By these gestures, the boys proclaimed Radha to be Braj's queen and Krishna's queen as well. Radha assented by motioning for Krishna to sit beside her. Meanwhile, Madhu danced about in exaltation. Lalita was pleased with Madhu. To show her gratitude, she placed one plump laddu in his mouth. Madhu munched and mumbled, "You have committed a grave offense by shackling a Brahmin. If you feed me 100,000 laddus, then perhaps you will be freed from your sin." "If you feed me 100,000...
Shackling a Brahmin.
Yeah. Anyway, it goes on and on. Chandrabali gets upset. Padma gets upset. And it's a whole another pastime where Padma's trying to, tout Chandrabali as the queen of Vrindavan, and then it goes on. Anyway, so, what's the time? So, Krishna and Radha, that's the goal, is to love Krishna and Radharani. And one should not feel that one is too fallen. One may be fallen, but the holy name is a touchstone, and it's called Chintamani. And there was another Chintamani who was a lady of easy virtue that Bilva Mangal Thakur was attracted to. And he was a Brahmin. He was actually a very knowledgeable Brahmin, but he was attached to this prostitute. So one night he crossed over the river Jamuna on a very stormy night, and he even clutched a dead body that was floating down the river. Not the river Jamuna, the Ganga. Was it the river? What, Jamuna? Ganga?
No, it's in South India.
South India? Okay, so anyway, whatever river. But he clutched the dead body. He got to the other shore. And then he went to a house. And it was a terrible night, storming everything. And he was climbing up the building. And he caught hold of a snake. Somehow he managed to get up to see Chintamani, the prostitute. When he saw her, she said, he told her, she sat him down. So he was explaining what he'd been through. He said, "You're so disgusting. How can you be so attracted? You know, you're supposed to be a Brahmin and you want to taste a pot of poison. Just thinking of this makes me become renounced. I'm going to give up this profession and I'm going to just surrender myself totally to Krishna." That's all in this book. Nice book. So then hearing what she said, then Bill the Mongol Tackle, he became inspired, yes, then I'm going to do that too. I'm just going to give everything up for Krishna. So then he became known as Lila Sukha. What does Lila Sukha mean? Lila Sukha, he was called Lila Sukha by Somagiri, his guru. Lila Sukha means the parrot who recites Krishna's glories. So that's why he's called Lila Sukha. And he lived, apparently, to be 700 years old. I think that's what, is that right? I think I've read that, the Prabhupada says. Anyway, so whatever one's condition, one should keep striving. There's a beautiful verse in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by Rupa Goswami. He says, "O my Lord, I do not have any love for you, nor am I qualified for discharging devotional service by hearing and chanting, nor do I possess the mystic power of a Vaishnav, knowledge, or pious activities, nor do I belong to a very high caste family. On the whole, I do not possess anything. Still, O beloved of the gopis, because you bestow your mercy on the most fallen, I have an unbreakable hope that is constantly in my heart. That hope is giving me great pain." So that's Rupa Goswami. We're supposed to be Rupanugas, so we have to follow in the footsteps of Rupa Goswami. And there's another beautiful thing Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said. He said, this should be the mood of a devotee, that patience is one's father, forgiveness is one's mother, compassion is one's sister, control of the mind is one's brother, eternal truth is one's wife, the 10 directions are one's clothing, and the sacred scriptures are one's food. So this should be the motto of a devotee, to try and live like this. So thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. If you want to get a set of these books, well advised, I'll take your orders. They're hard to get.